Welcome to a podcast of impossible things. This week, Sontaran stratagems, Doctor Who's pacifist ways, jaunty red berets, and Mr. Potato Head. Presented by
Caleb, the undefeated.
James, the cruel and unusual.
Swithin, the loud and obnoxious.
And Peter, the smug and condescending.
We're going to be watching the Sontaran stratagem, which sees the return of Sontaran's unit and Martha Jones. So, what are your thoughts on this episode? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it on first watching it, although in the couple of days since the episode originally aired, it's paled considerably in my memory.
Again.
But I haven't actually rewatched it yet, which was the kiss of death for the three previous episodes. This time, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, there seemed to be very little of any real depth or character that made it stand out or made it stick in the mind. Some fabulous effects works, again, visually very good, but it did feel as though we'd seen it all before. But that view may well change again on a second viewing. Swithin, how about you?
It was cliche central, basically. I think we'll get more about that later. James?
I didn't enjoy it, mainly because Martha came back. And I don't really like Martha.
Martha's good.
No, she's really not.
I like the return of Martha, but I didn't think it was the best of episodes. There were some nice touches, but it did seem to be a little by the numbers in places. I haven't watched it again yet, so it'll be interesting to see how it stands up on repeated viewing. And on that note, shall we
let's press on and
get on the engines.
I'm not sure if there's any particular reason why they keep using this linking visual.
Crazy stuff happens, and
Rattigan Academy. And it looks remarkably similar to several other buildings where there have been sinister goings on.
Yes. It's the building that's used for the Rattigan Academy has already appeared in the Sarah Jane Adventures as a scientific community researching the paranormal, and I believe has appeared in Torchwood as well.
Yeah, but it's where Gwen got married in Torchwood. Which makes you wonder why they don't shut it down as a site of, you know, rather weird goings-on.
Special scientific interests.
Yeah. Because obviously you have to introduce the first cliche, which has appeared in the first 30 seconds, which is an investigative journalist. Again.
They haven't been doing well this series, have they?
No.
Poor investigative journalist. And always feisty females as well in Doctor Who land.
Oh, we know she's doomed to the few credits sequence, and she's female, and she's investigating.
And she's vaguely cute as well, which also shortens her life expectancy.
And now we realise we now have another cliche, in 30 seconds later, of the nerd boy genius.
He was American for some reason, but
that's rather strange.
Just make him that little bit more annoying, I think.
Yes. To make you mourn that little bit less when he meets his inevitable fate in the next episode. Not only is he a boy genius, he's a boy genius talking to a hand who is watching him via a video link.
Classic.
It's everything that a Doctor Who villain sidekick could possibly be.
Ooh, and there's something a bit sinister about sat-navs. In fact, at Mac, the church that Aslop go to, we had a video sketch which involved a sat-nav going evil. So we got there before Doctor Who.
I assume sat-navs are inherently the work of Satan anyway.
It replaces wives, doesn't it, really?
Another location that has already appeared in the series, by the way, this bridge and bit of waterfront is actually Cardiff Bay, and appeared at the finale of Series 2, Doomsday, when the Cybermen were trying to take it from the British Army, who were holding it against them.
And it disappears into the water. That is quite a good opening.
It was.
And Donna's getting driving lessons.
Now, again here, there's a couple of nice little touches in the relationship between the Doctor and Donna. The whole teacher and student when it comes to piloting the TARDIS. Because we've never actually seen the Doctor teaching a companion to fly through the vortex before that.
Some odd music choices there.
Yeah.
Donna's theme again, I think.
Ooh, and it's Martha and her theme.
Oh, and there was some wooden delivery from Martha Jones.
That line was
Hugh Grant would be proud.
I'm bringing you back to her!
It was the way that she raised her eyes to heaven.
Yeah. It's because she'd forgotten what the line was at that point. They were holding up a big sign.
Lee Pertut, Catherine Tate,
and
Freema Agyeman. And I would like to give the Ming Mong Award for the saddest internet thread of the week to the thread on Outpost Gallifrey discussing the hand in depth. What does it imply about the status of Freema's character? Does hand relegate her to a lower position or indicate a higher position? And what exactly will happen when they have Billy and John Barrowman to fit in as well? Ooh, will they get hands?
And Sarah Jane and potentially Kane Hoyne as well.
So, oh, there's some nice shots here just of them into the TARDIS as they come out.
The Doctor and Martha meet again for the first time.
Is that a TV or has she put on weight? Or is it just the way she's standing?
It's hard to tell.
Ooh, nice TARDIS shot there.
That's a very nice TARDIS shot. It's very rare that we see
the inside
of the TARDIS, people walking around from outside.
Yes.
Now, at this point, I think it would be, now that she has actually arrived and we've had her introduced with this little and adjunct as well, to discuss the return of Martha Jones, played by Freema Agyeman, to the series. James, you have already voiced your
disgust. Yeah. I just thought that...
Ooh, she's engaged.
Yes.
Wooden pole, probably.
Some attempt at character development between series.
But, I mean, again, this doesn't make sense. If she met him in the year that never was, how does he know her? And why did she track him down? The only reason he liked her was because she'd gone through all that stuff in the year that never was. So why would he like her now?
Well, at the end of the last series, we did see her phoning him up and trying to make some sort of contact. So it's
Unit. I do like the Unit theme, the music. And the
yes, the reintroduction of Unit, of which we will talk a little bit more in just a minute, because we have an awful lot to say
about Martha.
About the new Unit.
Yes.
Their lorries, which look suspiciously like the Cybus Industries one from Series 2. But, yes, Martha Jones. Guys, where do we stand on the character of Martha? Caleb?
Yeah, I think Murph is good. I do think she suffered from the way you had the whole unrequited love thing where she'd complain to a secondary character each week about how she loved the Doctor but he didn't notice her. And it just seemed a bit of a retread of the whole is it returned, isn't it, relationship with Rose. I mean, it wasn't exactly the same, but it was close enough to feel a bit treading it's treading similar ground. And when they'd said she'd be more independent and mature, the kind of thing they're now doing with Donna was sort of what...
was what you...
Expected of Martha.
Yes. Now, Swithin, where do you stand on Martha?
I'm not a fan, particularly. Nice window dressing, but apart from that, not much. I think I'd sentence her to stabbing herself as a child, and then she could go to the existence and non-existence in perpetuity, and so she could continue to die and get back together again. But anyway, that's a Alien Bodies reference there, but never mind.
You've been thinking about this an awful lot.
Well, no, I just finished reading Alien Bodies, so...
I don't think death is quite necessary, but, you know...
It's a continual death, so she comes alive again and dies again. And
okay, good. Okay. Well, I think that she should have been written out. Or they should have made her so much cooler than she is now by, you know, making her totally traumatised by the year that never was and the rogue element with an eye patch. Because whenever... this was the point at which it all went downhill. The year that never was, she went through all this traumatic stuff and yet she never ended up with an eye patch. If you'd given her an eye patch, that would have been brilliant. You know, it would have made it look like she'd been through some hard fighting.
It would also have been slightly sexy, wouldn't it?
I'm
just thinking of Angelina Jolie from Sky Captain World of Tomorrow.
Yeah, oh, dear.
You see... I do agree with you to a large extent here, Swithin and James. I think Freem Rajman is a fantastic actress when given decent material to work with. In particular, I'm thinking of The Family of Blood here, where Martha's character had a bit of depth. Yes, she's a bit of a two-dimensional character whose job is to fancy the Doctor. Here she doesn't even get to fancy the Doctor particularly.
Yeah. She doesn't make Doctor cry. Not yet.
No.
Yeah. She did make the Doctor cry a lot, so it's nice that he hasn't started blubbing just yet.
Yeah.
But to get back to what's going on in the episode, we've had him meet up with UNIT again, and you've got the whole thing of he doesn't like the saluting and all this kind of thing.
Yes.
And you're beginning to have the contrast between the military ethic and the Doctor's rather more anarchic and anti-establishment ways of doing things.
Yes, there's been an almost immediate confrontation between the two, hasn't there? And it's been quite a big reintroduction for UNIT, you know, in a very big way. We've seen them throughout the new series, here and there, and we've heard mention of them, and we've seen the Valiant, you know, they're flying Captain Scarlet, cloud-based type thing.
Yes.
But this is the first time we've seen them doing anything.
Here we have Private Cannon and Private Fodder.
That's so true.
Neither of whom are particularly sympathetic characters, it should be pointed out.
They
are both quite brash, pig-headed, swaggering soldier types.
Soldiers.
Yes. Which, again, takes us back to the programme's depiction of the military ethic and military power. Obviously doesn't come down in favour of the way things are done. Even UNIT, which is a generally benevolent military force. So
it's true, although I don't remember it being depicted in such a clunky fashion. The soldiers, they have guns and the Doctor complains, you have a gun. You don't say. They're military.
It should be pointed out, for those few of you, I suppose, listening, who don't already know, UNIT was a very big presence in Doctor Who back in the 70s.
Yeah.
John Pertwee's incarnation of the Doctor in particular worked very closely with them, and there were occasional confrontations between the Doctor's more benevolent pacifist and, as Caleb said, slightly anarchic way of dealing with problems and UNIT's sometimes straight down the line five round rapid
yes.
kind of approach to things. It would be far more pragmatic, you know, shoot first, ask questions later, but not always, you know.
No.
If they did, they were usually forced into it more often than not. Whereas here, it seems to be a case of military power is automatically bad.
Yeah.
I wonder whether
I'm not sure.
They might develop that in the second episode, but so far it does seem a bit clunky.
Because he's.
Oh,
and we've heard references to Guantanamo.
These guys
Bay,
are definitely doomed. Something's going to happen. They're investigating something and there's metal clanging.
And there is pink and green lighting in the background.
Never a good sign.
Which is always a sign of alien goings on.
Mr. Blobby going to appear?
Well, put him in a Sontaran suit.
Ruth Helmut's reveal.
Blobby!
That'd be genius.
Ooh.
I should point out that this bit was very nicely done and one of the creepier moments of the new series.
That's true.
As this cloning vat opens up.
I always have to ask the question though, why is all the gooey stuff always green?
Because it's alien.
I think it's rather Matrix style here.
Yeah.
Matrix style, but incredibly effective, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very good, that.
A sort of strange fetus-like, featureless, moulded shape.
Yeah, and interesting, it has an umbilical cord to the back of the neck, similar to where the probic vent is with the Zontar, and nice little
never
there, potentially.
Never really, appeared to the Centaurans to actually put a cover over the probic vent, did it? It was like, we can feed ourselves and open the hatch. Didn't really think about that, did they?
And we'll give ourselves a little hole in the back. First appearance of the Centaurans.
Who have got a very cool voice, I must add.
Did they sound like this in the classic series at all?
I can't remember. Similarly, although it does sound a lot like the Kralls from the Android Invasion.
Right.
Because
they do sound like sort of British generals of the First World War.
Ready you can't!
Yes, absolutely.
How dare you try and foil my alien invasion! It is one of those sci-fi tropes, also known as a cliche of the noble warrior.
Oh,
But it is quite fun, and let's see, haven't really had any since the Sycorax in the new series, and they're quite different, and they are quite distinctive.
It is a peculiarly British take on the noble warrior as well, isn't it? It isn't the sort of noble savage, which, as you say, was more the Sycorax sort of thing with their voodoo paraphernalia. And I suppose in very similar fashion, the Klingons from Star Trek or the Luxans from Farscape, who are terribly tribal and generally played by black actors. Whereas these guys are...
Oh, the eyes!
The big, I would say the big reveal of the Centaurans.
Which we'd seen on the radio times cover last
week. Were it not for the fact that the BBC had been publicising them for 6 months solid.
Yeah. You'd think that if they, considering they know the media storm that surrounds Doctor Who, you'd think that they'd realise that having a slow build through the episode to the full reveal of the monster doesn't really work when there's a good chance it'll be on the cover of the Radio Times and every other listings magazine.
Indeed. See Daleks in Manhattan in particular.
Yeah, particularly Notorious.
Which, coincidentally enough, was Helen Rayner's two-part story for the last series. And, of course, this is her entry for series four.
Yeah. And this seemed to be fair. Is quite nice. Just a good moment between the Doctor and Martha.
Yes, a little confrontation between the two at long last. Mm. And going some way to address the Doctor's rather confrontational take on the military.
Yeah.
Who seems to advocate being on the outside and being the idealist, whereas Martha is the gradualist on the inside, which is a perennial debate within any ideological movement.
Yes. Although it is...
Here comes Donna with her super temping skills.
Yes, Donna being twice as interesting as Martha Jones simply by turning up with an empty arch file and pointing out how stupid everyone's being. I really do have to hand it for Catherine Tate. She's won me over completely, and I think she's the most interesting character the most interesting companion we've had in the new series since Rose in series one. Rose in series two, I felt they dropped the ball and didn't really develop her character particularly, and didn't develop her relationship with the Doctor.
Profile genius. That's brilliant. They attended his local primary school. That's great.
They have committed the most heinous crime imaginable by actually describing this one-dimensional cardboard cutout character as boy genius. As though we hadn't all figured it out.
Perhaps he'll turn out to be a mutant and it'll be a deliberate story that he doesn't really have a developed personality.
Maybe he'll turn out to be a complete pleb who was given a bunch of clever chips left over.
by...
Or maybe he's one of the faceless ones.
Oh, we're straying into serious geek territory.
that also flew over my head, and I know the old series pretty
well. I never mind. It's just me.
You flew over my head as well, obviously. Was there a faceless one's reference?
This is
no, there wasn't. I was just referencing he could be.
Okay.
And
now just
by the way, Donna. If you travel with the Doctor, your family's gonna get tortured!
it's nice to have this scene between the companions. And they do seem to be building up this thing with Donna, if you travel with the Doctor, you get hurt, so you wonder what they've got in store.
Although we do get another building up the Doctor as a semi-god again. You know, Doctor, he's fantastic, but he's like fire.
Yes.
You travel in, get too close, and you'll get burnt.
This insistence of not talking about the Doctor as though he's actually a character, but talking about him as though he's some sort of primal element or part of the universe that defies understanding.
I think it's fine if his enemies do that.
Yeah, I mean, but... Family of Blood, it really all started from, didn't it?
It really dehumanises him to... too great an extent, I think.
And waited to the point where he refers to himself in the third person.
Although it would be quite fun if he met one of his previous incarnations and started referring to himself as in the third person.
Oh dear.
Yes. Now, the episode appears to be contradicting its own internal moral logic by introducing, in a moment as we'll see, a unit soldier who's a lot further down the ranks and is a private, who's effectively the equivalent of Sergeant Benton or Yates from the original series, who's a plucky young lad, salt of the earth, and the Doctor really likes, even though he's carrying a gun and he's just, you know, espoused forth about how anyone who carries a gun is generally a bad guy. And...
Another mention of the Medusa Cascade, by the way.
Yes, which is the second or third mention of it so far this series.
Third, I think. Yeah. Also mentioned by the Master
At the end of Series 3. Talking about a rift that the Doctor sealed, is that correct?
Yeah.
And
his name was written there.
Yeah.
The internet is awash with ideas that possibly it was sealed with his name. Ooh. Going back to the stuff with the witches and Shakespeare and the power of the name.
And here's one of those scenes where they use Donna really well. You have a sort of slightly more worthy moment, as it were, and then she...
What, being more chav-like?
Punctures it, that sort of slight...
I did want to hit her at that point.
Immigrant workers, this is a subtext on. Polish guy coming over here, getting brainwashed.
I'm working 24 hours a day.
All he can say is, I have come here to work. And there was a mention, as units stormed the building, they were looking for illegal aliens. What are we supposed to read into all of this?
So might be referencing Mike Tucker's story that never got made, back in the late 80s.
Which was?
Illegal Alien.
Okay.
Which he wrote up as a BBC book.
He did.
Featuring the Cybermen.
Okay.
Well, that's what I thought when I heard it, but probably wasn't referencing it.
Really, did UNIT look very hard at any of these people that they had captured? Because I think that you could probably tell that there was something wrong with him.
They were all doing that. Extras, wooden zombie acting.
Or
did they all just look at each other, shrug, and go, they're Polish, they're all like that. All they say is, come here to work. Like any Polish immigrant.
I'd get cheap vodka. No, we don't get cheap vodka in Britain.
Donna popping home to see...
Bernard.
To see Bernard Cribbins. Now, a couple of us recognise this street, because we have some friends, the Hawks, who live house just over there. And the futon on which we're sitting was bought from this very road. You can see the house in this shot.
Yeah.
People often say that, don't they? Mm. Ah, hello, haven't seen you for days, random person on the street.
I know, this little kid playing his football. It would be great if he got knocked over by a car, wouldn't it?
Or if his head split open and tentacles came out, he attacked him. Now, this bit of street will play a greater role at the end of the series.
Yep.
As they filming were filming there. Here with the Daleks.
Oh.
With the Daleks, then?
Yeah, they were. Mm. Yeah. This street and the street surrounding it.
Do you remember when Doctor Who first came back and they were talking about killing off the Daleks? And not having them in there. What would they have done without them?
The Toclophane were originally created as the replacement monster for the Daleks in Rob Sherman, right. When Rob Sherman had to rewrite the script when they didn't know if they'd have the right for the Daleks. Yeah, then they they hadn't got that name yet, but this sphere that would be revealed to be humans from the end of the universe. And it's the Cribbins! Yes. Yay!
I'm quite glad they did get rights to the Daleks.
Yes.
Because the Toclophane are rubbish. I'm sorry.
It is true.
They're floating metal balls with spikes on them.
Ooh. Don't go with them, Martha. Can't you hear the music?
Martha heading into trouble. You'd think, if Martha has been given this position and had her doctorate rushed through because of her
and
field
if
experience.
Been, if she's been travelling with the doctor all this time, she might know better.
She would have learned to pick out mind control zombies a mile away.
That's how you escape from people, though, kids. Yes. Grasp their arms as they pull you towards your inevitable doom.
Yes. Now, I think.
Nah, that was it. Continuity problem. I don't know, his face immediately cut. Instantaneously, and his hand was out in front of his face.
Yes,
the hands are
there are some continuity issues with Bernard Cribbins' positions here.
Wouldn't it be great if Bernard Cribbins was a companion rather than Martha or Donna?
I was thinking that earlier this week.
It would be so much better.
Yes.
Do you agree, James?
As well as Donna.
No, just...
I do, I like Donna a lot. I think
it would be great to have him as a companion.
Yes, which he was, of course, in the Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD, which was the 60s movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course he's going to meet the Daleks again later on this series, which will be a quite nicely indulgent little bit of a fan wank.
It's a great phrase.
I think, now this is a complete aside and has nothing to do with the episode at all, if Bernard Cribbins and Maria, the teenage girl from the Sarah Jane Adventures, were companions, either together or separately, that would be fantastic.
They do seem to have limited themselves in what companion material is, haven't they, really?
Yes.
Youngish, really female. If you pass that, you're pretty much in.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Again, this is one of the reasons why I like Donna in that she's a lot older than the two previous companions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Catherine Tate is older than David Tennant, isn't she?
I think she's late 30s, isn't she?
Yes. I mean, not much older than David Tennant, particularly. But yes, there is that slight difference in the age dynamic there.
Oh, here we have a doctor liking a guy with a gun, surprisingly.
Yes.
Maybe he's going to be the new companion.
Maybe he's actually acting out his moral decree of last week. It's far better not to have any moral absolutes. So I'm going to tell the one guy with the gun that I don't want to know anything about him because he's got a gun, so he's obviously a bad guy. And the other guy with a gun, I'll just go and talk to him because he's probably quite nice.
Is it me? Or is it like you're in prison? Because slightly those orange jumpsuits
all
they have.
All the geniuses at this boarding school are wearing Guantanamo-based jumpsuits. It is slightly suspicious. Now, they've arrived at the Raskin Academy. Doctor and plucky British Tommy.
Yes. And it's a laboratory. Yeah. And a surefire way to get David Tennant putting on his enthusiastic googly voice.
And his glasses, things. Yes.
Oh yeah, brainy specs.
Jumping back to a topic that we touched on briefly last week, the Doctor's quiff appears to have receded slightly. It's not as preposterously...
Oh no, wait, there it was pretty bad.
It was true.
It's still a thing
in
of beauty.
In profile, yes, exceptional.
It is quite impressive, but Doesn't look as though it's had, you know, CGI assistance.
No.
This guy, what's his name, Mattigan, just needs a slap. The boy genius.
He does. If we were going to do something interesting with a boy genius character, because I'm not against having boy geniuses in sci-fi, even though they are simply a cliche, if you can do something original with them, Adam, for example, from the first series, from the episode Dalek, was a fairly fresh take on the boy genius. And that he had a bit of depth and he had some character quirks and he went horribly, horribly wrong by the end and was done.
Yeah. Very unceremoniously, which I liked. It was funny.
How would you guys have approached the boy genius character differently in this episode? Russell T. Davis rolls up and says, here's my shopping list for this episode. I want a boy genius character. How do you treat that?
What you use him for is he would be great if he was using the Centaurans. If he was trying to double bluff the Centaurans.
Yeah, and it might turn out that he is. I don't think he's been set up particularly for
It seems to be the classic, oh, someone on Earth who doesn't like what he's got, we're going to help you get it. But if he was going to use, if he had a bigger plan than the Centaurans were using them for, it would make him slightly more interesting.
I think if he just came across as a bit more sympathetic, so it wasn't just wasn't so one-dimensionally annoying. Oh, this is fun. Doctor just turns up.
Yes.
We're really alive.
cheesy pun.
The greatest military force stand around and go, oh, an intruder. Intruder. What do we do with them? Because I can't remember. Yes. They do look quite cool, it has to be said. They do look an awful lot better here than they did in the initial publicity shots that put out the Sontar. That got a lot of people quite worried. I think they were quite badly lit. And
I think they sometimes rush out these shots because to preempt them being leaked, and the same with the first Cyberman publicity picture, it didn't show it at its best.
That's true. Potentially, do you think we could disregard future publicity shots of feature the bad guys and wait for something a little closer to the actual episode?
We just had another over the top moment where the Centauran guy referred to him as, I've got his name, something
Starving Undefeated.
Yes, which was unnecessary in the extreme.
Quite a nice prosthetic, though. It's far better in motion as the actor's actually speaking. It looks a lot better than it did.
The probic vent.
The fatal weakness. All the best villains have one.
Death.
Oh, another great classic villain segment.
We now know that the Doctor won the Gallifreyan badminton doubles.
Yeah, it was a squash racket.
Does that now mean that he is General Stander once defeated, but never again?
Yes.
I just had it just before the unit soldier referred to the Unified Intelligence Task Force, which is a slight name change from back in the 70s when it was United Nations Intelligence Task Force. For some reason, they decided to change the name.
They seem to be under new management, don't they?
Which is rather strange considering in the first scene with them in the big lorry, they mentioned lots of United Nations funding.
Yes.
So they want to keep the link, but not in the name.
So, for a boy genius, he can't tell two very obviously different Centaurans apart.
Although I do like the Centaurans' response, saying we have the same trouble telling the difference between humans, which is nice. I like that.
Yes.
Yeah, although they are supposed to be a clone race.
not all necessarily cloned from the same Centauran, though. I mean, there could be batches of different clones.
You could get different models and things.
Yeah. Yes, for different purposes. different specialities.
Stop.
Hey. Top music.
Again, yeah. Alien lighting.
It's all
quite pink.
Ooh.
Martha in an S&M fantasy.
Wonderfully though. This is actually, by the look of things, is the cyber conversion unit from Torchwood.
It is indeed, with some little blue flashy travelers.
Yeah. It's just fantastic that they obviously only had one harness for alien fleets, and so just use that over and over again.
They must have shopped at the same galactic B&Q as the Cybermen did.
I think it raises a very good point of the fact that so many elements of the new series are being recycled more and more frequently now. Already this episode we've had two recycled locations. We've had a recycled prop from, as you say, the Torchwood cyber conversion unit. And so much of the plot, it has to be said, has been recycled.
I mean, I can forgive the recycled sort of props and stuff. I don't think that's so noticeable. But I think the just the story, though, some of the elements are a bit familiar without having a particularly fresh take on them. The everyday object, well, I say everyday, sat nav,
most days.
Yeah, effectively.
Fairly.
More and more.
Turning bad. It's a good part of what Doctor Who does.
As Lawrence Miles said in his review this week, though, perhaps they've taken this idea of a domestic object with a sinister alien agenda a little bit too far. It's appearing too frequently, especially as we've got the everyday location in, what I say everyday location, contemporary 21st century Earth location of the factory.
It's a nice with a hidden CGI alien shot.
Basement and a spaceship in orbit.
We have a nice spaceship with seemingly looking like Dalek domes on the outside.
Yeah, but fantastic bit of effects again.
CGI, yeah.
I have to hand it to the mill. The computer effects this series really have been superb. A big step up over previous series.
I just feel that of all the elements, you've got the evil clone, and it's the boy genius, and none of the ideas are particularly original, and there just doesn't seem to be that Doctor Who spark of inventiveness to the way they're combined.
Feels a bit secondhand, a bit reheated.
Yeah, it's still well done. It's just that bit familiar.
Yes. It has some nice touches, one of which is coming up now as the Doctor fools the Atmos sat-nav.
Although I did think that was rather odd, the scene coming up, considering the first death we see with the Atmos machine, they somehow are able to lock the car, which doesn't take place with the bit coming up.
Although the implication is that the Doctor has
already gone over the edge,
short-circuited the Atmos system, and it's fighting itself.
Well, he's not really. All he does is he goes right towards the end, stops, knowing that he'll think he'll have gone off because he was that close, and jump out. That's what I thought he was doing here. It doesn't seem to have changed anything with the system, but merely gone so close that they won't recognise like a couple of feet.
I like the little parody of the running away from an explosion.
Yes.
You just get the little pop.
Yeah. The Doctor's obvious disappointment that the entire car hasn't exploded. I think what's happened here is that, from the Suntaran's point of view, tracking them from space, it's so close to the edge.
That's my point. But yes. I think, why doesn't it just lock, like it did last time, before they went near the edge? It just seems convenient.
Because I think it's just because the Doctor's already shorted out the Atmos's control of the car.
Okay.
In which case, why not later on use the same technique? Or maybe that is going to be how they get round it next week. Mm. The cliffhanger ending.
Potentially.
Oh yes, and it's the extra catalytic converter. It was a point, Peter, you made before about the recycling theme.
Yes. Yes, there seems to
and
be...
And the eco theme.
There seems to be a very cursory environmental message here about cars being bad.
Yes,
and
it's like...
the Cribbins recognises the Doctor.
Even if we get rid of all the carbon, well, we'll still have more cars, which is going to deplete the world's resources.
Yes.
And we're all going to die.
I would be interested to find out what the carbon footprint of each episode of Doctor Who is. Given the amount of, you know... trucks of equipment and lighting and cast and things
well,
that have to get shipped back and forth.
I don't think it's going to be as big as the Live 8.
No, probably not.
Is it?
Or Live Earth, where they
Live Earth,
jetted all the stars from around the world in aeroplanes to
probably
promote.
Privately chartered as well. Yeah, you know, the great irony. I love it.
I still think we should all buy Segways. I'm appealing now to all of the listeners of the podcast. Yeah, all 12 of you, however many of you there may be. Go out and buy a Segway. Let's start a Segway revolution.
No, the Segways are going to be next series' evil everyday item.
Invasion of the Segways.
We've already discovered, thanks to their appearance in The Runaway Bride, the secret Torchwood base below the Thames, that they are actually the result of reverse-engineered alien technology captured by Torchwood. Segways, along with blue flashing chav lights, which seem to appear on every Torchwood building and bit of technology. Except the Segways, ironically. Segways with chav lights would probably be
perhaps chav lights are the Segway's weakness, the thing that can stop them.
It could be.
Donna's mum so far has just been loudmouthed and irritating. I hope they begin to develop her character a bit.
Indeed, Donna's mum appears to be everything I was afraid Donna might be. So,
yes,
I'm quite happy to keep her as loudmouthed and annoying for the immediate future at least, because it makes a nice contrast with her daughter.
I think that Russell T. Davies does have a thing about mothers being loudmouthed and annoying.
Was his mother what loudmouthed and annoying?
I don't know, but Rose's mother was, and Martha's mother was, well,
certainly sharp.
yeah.
Intimidating.
And he has said that, you know, it's all women bicker with their mothers and therefore, you know, must be shown to be doing that.
Yes, because we won't understand anything that's not day-to-day, obviously. Yeah. When you know, the audience is now supposed to be more sophisticated than it was back in the day. Yeah. But we could handle alien companions and the companions from Clodden Field, but now apparently we can't.
Well, I don't think we had any truly aliens and companions. They're just humans who happened to have been introduced in a story set on another world.
Yeah, but there were humanoid characters, but
they had different purposes.
No, but they brought a different perspective to the show.
We did have two.
I do think it's a bit stupid of him the way he just gets into the car. It's sort of character doing. This is Bernard Cribbins, and he's now trapped in there.
The glass is unbreakable, you say.
Well, there is precedent for that in Partners in Crime. They deadlock sealed the building and then couldn't break the glass to get in. But yeah, it is quite. I do think one of the good things about this episode is that you can't work out exactly how everything is going to play out in the next episode. And it is quite big and dramatic. You've got all this poison gas going off all over the world.
And we've got Murray Staple, we've got orchestra, choir and a drum beat.
And the Sontarans about to kill Bernard Cribbins. How evil can you get?
Yeah.
That's even more evil than trying to kill that kid that was walking down the street that I was suggesting.
At this point, I must point out that General Stahl keeps introducing himself as leader of the 10th Sontaran Battle Fleet, which appears to consist of one ship. Now, I think this might be an explanation as to why they're not launching a full-scale invasion of the Earth, but I'll talk more about this after the credits.
They have got a good dance routine, though.
The Sontaran Happy Dance.
the Haka. Which sounds surprisingly like they're saying Sultana, Sultana, Sultana. I do like this shot. It's nice. The stage with the Doctor with lots of dry ice and then with a black silhouetted thing.
Nicely
ended.
Now, the Sontaran Happy Dance is forgivable and perfectly legitimate if it weren't for the fact that Boy Genius was also doing it. It's a bit silly. It's very bad. So there's that cliffhanger. The world is being gassed to death in its cars, so presumably, as long as you're just not in the car, you're fine, really.
Well,
for the moment.
Although what they'll probably do is they'll probably fire these cars into the side of airports.
Controversial. Yeah.
And somewhat controversial.
Now, I've not seen this. No, Kirsty Walk.
Ooh. I'm really hoping that the red coated other geniuses are going to stage some kind of fight back. Yes. I would really enjoy it if, you know, we had some good loyal geniuses.
Slick back his quiff at the end.
There we go. That's the
we've ended. Oh dear.
Oh dear.
That was Graham Norton and John Barrowman.
So that's a good. We've inadvertently paused the experiment.
With John Barrowman's open mouth from the trailer for
John Barrowman's Search for an
I'd Do Anything.
Yes.
On 04455, if you want to pause it at this point, it's a very flattering shot.
if somebody ever invents a John Barrowman inflatable doll. It will look like
a brain bleach now.
Oh dear.
I'm sure somebody at BBC Enterprises has just gone on the phone to somebody and gone, Yes!
Anyway, moving swiftly on.
Sorry.
You were going to say something about the Sontarans invading battle fleets.
No, it's. The Sontarans, as you'll probably know, are a big militaristic force who tend to, as the Doctor pointed out in this episode, tend to prefer full-on confrontation to skulking around and, you know, lots of little covert plots like taking over the world's sat-nav systems. And as we said, I would have preferred a full-scale military invasion as the cliffhanger, because it would have just... We've seen the unit troops all standing by ready with their hardware. We've seen this big alien spaceship that presumably has lots of alien hardware.
And they could put the massive computer army generating software to better use than the adipose.
The massive software. That would have been quite fun.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, we'll have to wait and see what they do in episode 2. I'm prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt for now. But I have a theory as to why we're only seeing one ship. It's not much of a fleet. As big a ship as it appears to be. I think it ties into all of these other planets disappearing. I have a suspicion this may actually be the last Sontaran ship. And they're actually on the run, which is why they're being so cloak and dagger about their invasion. I have a feeling this may tie into the series finale. That's pure supposition.
Something we missed, one of the things I liked, was the way that the... Sontarans were quite miffed at being left out of the Time War.
That was funny.
Especially since they invaded Gallifrey, admittedly mostly due to the Doctor's help in the invasion of time as part of one of his little schemes. But that was quite a nice little touch. You don't really think of Sontarans being miffed, but I think that probably describes their attitude quite well.
Yes. In fact, that seems to you know, describe them throughout this episode as a whole, because they take umbrage at the Doctor for suggesting they're not being manly enough.
Well, they've got small mice in
facing up to the bullets. They have, really, yes. They're trying to compensate for
the lack of height.
The lack of height. Mm. But yes, no. I'd be interested to see exactly what they do with the Sontarans in the next episode.
Yeah.
I'll have to wait a few weeks because I'll be in Spain for the next week's episode.
So we'll have to set the video for you.
Yes, please, guys, if you could tape it, that would be much appreciated. But there we go. That's the end of another week's episode. What do we each think? I'll go on a second viewing. Starting with Caleb, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's what you might call a standard runaround.
Mm-hmm.
It ticks the boxes. It's quite fun, but it lacks that originality and spark that sets apart the best episodes of the show when it's firing on all cylinders. So I have to wait until next week to see whether it pulls all the threads together well. But yeah, I can't help feeling entertained, but not much more there to go back and rewatch.
Okay, James.
Actually, in retrospect, I liked it a lot more than I remembered liking it. I think that it's actually quite a nice setup for next week. Mm. I think that it will very much depend on how next week's episode does turn out, but I think that we've got some genuinely unknown elements. What's going on with the cloning and Martha? Will Bernard Cribbins be rescued from his car and such? And I think that for once they've ended on a cliffhanger that actually works with, you know, there doesn't seem to be a way that the Doctor is going to be able to stop the entirety of Earth being consumed by pollution and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm genuinely actually more impressed than I thought I would be.
Yeah, I do think it's a good cliffhanger.
Okay. Yes. Swinner?
Lightweight. Sums up basically the previous three stories, I guess. This seemed basically the same as I saw it the first time. Just a collection of pastiche ideas melded together in a rather unoriginal way. I agree they've set some things up nicely, but historically, in the last few seasons, the second episode of the two-parters have been distinctly worse than the first.
Yes,
so I'm not holding much out for this.
I have to agree with you there. I'm not overly optimistic for the second part, given the precedent
history
in the new series. Although, having said that,
I disagree. I think World War III was a better episode than Aliens of London. I think
I've excised that
from
my mind.
Age of Steel was built on.
Do you reckon?
Age of Steel, the first two-thirds, I thought.
And I thought that
The Doctor Dances, of course, was a magnificent closing part.
I thought the first episode was better, though.
It had the set. The setup is always going to be more tantalising than the payoff, though.
But and with Daleks in Manhattan, again, I thought the second part of the story was on the par with the first, so I'm not sure I'd agree with that point, but although I've been slightly meh about it, I did genuinely enjoy it. It was a good episode. It was solidly done, solidly constructed, good CGI and design. It's just leaving me with a bit of a nagging feeling of there could have been something a bit better. It just lacked a little bit of sparkle. It's still a good story, but lacking.
It seems to play it rather safe. They're trying to do simple things which have done before and have worked, and putting them executing them quite well.
Yes,
I far prefer them to misexecute a very, very good idea, at least to the fact I know they're trying.
Yeah, you like to experiment a little
bit. I mean, I can forgive bad execution of wacky ideas because you've done something different. Mm.
Which, given Doctor Who's potential format, is really what the show should be doing.
Yeah, I felt that given that you were bringing two companions together, they only shared a couple of scenes together and they didn't really interact that much and then split them off. And so I felt that perhaps didn't make as much use of the potential in bringing them together, which is doing something different.
Mm.
Well, having started out the evening fairly cynically, I have to agree with Caleb to a large extent here. I really enjoyed the episode. It wasn't, as I said, it had faded from my mind, and I suspect it will have done again by tomorrow. Because there's not really much to it. It's all fairly by the numbers. Mm. It's almost as though there is now an archetypal format for a contemporary Doctor Who episode, which is worrying, to be honest. But it's only the first half of the story, so we'll have to wait and see what happens next week. But really, it's going to live and die on the second episode, I would say. But there we have to leave it and wrap up, I think. But do feel free to drop us a line, as usual, at impossiblepodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
Visit our Facebook group and drop us a line there as well. Thank you for listening, and we shall be speaking to you again next week.